Hi, I'm MC Jessie.
大家好，读你听二点零，今日继续读 Miguel de Cervantes 嘅《Don Quixote》，读到第44节啦。呢节嘅名叫做《In which are continued the unheard of adventures of the》，大家依然喺个旅馆入面。咁上一回嘅讲到咧，窗外嘅歌声咧，原来咧系吸引 Clara。Clara 边个咧？就系啱啱进入旅馆嘅执行官嘅女。咁即系话佢系呢个囚徒嘅侄女啦。咁 Dorothea 咧同 Cardenia 咧都听过呢个歌声喎，佢哋比较敏锐。而 Dorothea 咧听完 Clara 佢对于歌唱者原来认识嘅，佢知道晒内容去脉啦，佢就咧话我一定要撮合你对小恋人啊。咁但系 Clara 咧即时咧就有啲缩沙啦，因为 Clara 话、哎、我自己都未成年，仲年纪咁细咁样。与此同时咧，就 Don Quixote 喺旅馆外面守夜嘅时候咧，呢、这个旅馆嘅女儿啦，同埋佢嘅仆人 Mary Thomas 咧，就同佢开个玩笑啊。不过呢个玩笑咧，我只觉得有啲太大啦，因为 Don Quixote 咧事后咧系痛苦万分嘅，佢嘅只手咧穿过咗个窿，挂咗喺埲墙上面，本来咧就企喺 Rodinante 呢只马上面，都尚且可以支撑，但系后来咧连只马都行开咗咧，佢就成个人挂住喺度，个痛楚咧系比较严重啊。好，我哋睇下 Don Quixote 点样奉公法噶先，跟住我嚟交俾 Costa 同大家读嚟听。
So loud, in fact, were the shouts of Don Quixote that the landlord opening the gate of the inn in all haste came out in dismay and ran to see who was uttering such cries. And those who were outside joined him. Maritornes, who had been by this time roused up by the same outcry, suspecting what it was, ran to the loft end without anyone seeing her.Untied the halter by which Don Quixote was suspended, and down he came to the ground in the sight of the landlord and the travellers, who approaching asked him what was the matter with him that he shouted so. He, without replying a word, took the rope off his wrist, and rising to his feet, leaped upon Rocinante, raised his buckler on his arm, put his lance at rest, and making a considerable circuit of the pain, came back at a half gallop, exclaiming, Whoever shall say that I have been enchanted with just cause,Provided my lady, the princess Micomicona, grants me permission to do so, I give him the lie, challenge him, and defy him to single combat. The newly arrived travellers were amazed at the words of Don Quixote, but the landlord removed the surprise by telling them who he was, and not to mind him as he was out of his senses. They then asked the landlord if by any chance a youth of about 15 years of age had come to that inn, one dressed like a muleteer,and of such and such an appearance, describing that of Donna Clara's lover. The landlord replied that there were so many people in the inn he had not noticed the person they were inquiring for, but one of them, observing the coach in which the judge had come, said, He is here no doubt, for this is the coach he is following. Let one of us stay at the gate, and the rest go in to look for him. Or indeed it would be as well if one of us went round the inn, lest he should escape over the wall of the yard. So be it, said another.And while two of them went in, one remained at the gate and the other made the circuit of the inn, observing all which, the landlord was unable to conjecture for what reason they were taking all these precautions, though he understood they were looking for the youth whose description they had given him. It was by this time broad daylight, and for that reason, as well as in consequence of the noise Don Quixote had made, everybody was awake and up.But particularly Donna Clara and Dorothea, for they had been able to sleep but badly that night, the one from agitation at having her lover so near her, the other from curiosity to see him. Don Quixote, when he saw that not one of the four travellers took any notice of him or replied to his challenge, was furious and ready to die with indignation and wrath. And if he could have found in the ordinance of chivalry that it was lawful for the knight-errant to undertake or engage in another enterprise, when he had plighted his word and faith not to involve himself in any until he had made an end of the one to which he was pledged, he would have attacked the whole of them, and would have made them return an answer in spite of themselves. But considering that it would not become him, nor be right, to begin any new emprise until he had established Micomicona in the kingdom, he was constrained to hold his peace and wait quietly to see what would be the upshot of the proceedings of those same travellers, one of whom found a youth they were seeking lying asleep by the side of a muleteer, without a thought of anyone coming in search of him, much less finding him.The man laid hold of him by the arm, saying, It becomes you well indeed, Signor Don Luis, to be in the dress you wear, and well the bed in which your mother reared you. The youth rubbed his sleepy eyes and stared for a while at him, who held him, but presently recognized him as one of his father's servants, at which he was so taken aback that for some time he could not find or utter a word. While the servant went on to say, "There is nothing for it now, Signor Don Luis, but to submit quietly and return home, unless it is your wish that my lord, your father, should take his departure for the other world, for nothing else can be the consequence of the grief he is in at your absence." "But how did my father know that I had gone this road and in distress?" said Don Luis. "It was the student to whom you confide your intentions," answered the servant, "that disclosed them. Touched with pity at the distress he saw your father suffer on missing you, he therefore dispatched four of his servants in quest of you, and here we all are at your service, better pleased than you can imagine that we shall return so soon and be able to restore you to those eyes that so yearned for you." "That shall be as I please, or as heaven orders," returned Don Luis. "What can you please or have an order," said the other, "except to agree to go back? Anything else is impossible." All this conversation between the two was overheard by the muleteer at whose said Don Luis lay, and rising, he went to report what had taken place to Don Fernando, Cardenio, and the others, who had by this time dressed themselves, and told them how the man had dressed the youth as Don, and what words had passed, and how he wanted him to return to his father, which the youth was unwilling to do. With this, and what they already knew of the rare voice that heaven had bestowed upon him, they all felt very anxious to know more particularly who he was, and even to help him if it was attempted to employ force against him. So they hastened to where he was still talking and arguing with his servant. Dorothea at this instant came out of her room, followed by Donna Clara all in a tremor. And calling Cardenio aside, she told him in a few words the story of the musician and Donna Clara, and he at the same time told her what had happened, how his father's servant had come in search of him. But in telling her so, he did not speak low enough, but that Donna Clara heard what he said, at which she was so much agitated that had not Dorothea hastened to support her, she would have fallen to the ground. Cardenio then bade Dorothea return to her room, as he would endeavour to make the whole matter right, and they did as he desired. All the four who had come in quest of Don Luis had now come into the inn and surrounded him, urging him to return and console his father at once and without a moment's delay. He replied that he could not do so on any account until he had concluded some business in which his life, honour, and heart were at stake. The servants pressed him, saying that most certainly they would not return without him, and that they would take him away whether he liked it or not. "You shall not do that," replied Don Luis, "unless you take me dead. Though, however you take me, it will be without life." By this time, most of those in the inn had been attracted by the dispute, but particularly Cardenio, Don Fernando, his companions, the judge, the curate, the barber, and Don Quixote, for he now considered there was no necessity for mounting guard over the castle any longer. Cardenio, being already acquainted with the young man's story, asked the men who wanted to take him away what object they had in seeking and carry off this youth against his will. "Our object," said one of the four, "is to save the life of his father, who is in danger of losing it through this gentleman's disappearance." Upon this, Don Luis exclaimed, "There is no need to make my affairs public here. I am free, and I will return if I please, and if not, none of you shall compel me." "Reason will compel your worship," said the man, "and if it has no power over you, it has power over us, to make us do what we came for and what it is our duty to do." "Let us hear what the whole affair is about," said the judge at this. But the man, who knew him as neighbor of theirs, replied, "Do you not know this gentleman, Signor Judge? He is the son of your neighbor, who has run away from his father's house in a dress so unbecoming his rank, as your worship may perceive." The judge on this looked at him more carefully and recognized him, and embracing him said, "What folly is this, Signor Don Luis? Or what can have been the cause that could have induced you to come here in this way and in distress, and so ill becomes your condition?" Tears came into the eyes of the young man, and he was unable to utter a word in reply to the judge, who told the four servants not to be uneasy, for all would be satisfactorily settled. And then taking Don Luis by the hand, he drew him aside and asked the reason of his having come there. But while he was questioning him, they heard a loud outcry at the gate of the inn, the cause of which was that two of the guests who had passed the night there, seeing everybody busy about finding out what it was the four men wanted, had conceived the idea of going off without paying what they owed. But the landlord, who minded his own affairs more than other people's, caught them going out of the gate and demanded his reckoning, abusing them for their dishonesty with such language that he drove them to reply with their fists. And so they began to lay on him in such a style that the poor man was forced to cry out and call for help. The landlady and her daughter could see no one more free to give aid than Don Quixote, and to him the daughter said, "Sir Knight, by the virtue God has given you, help my poor father, for two wicked men are beating him to a mummy." To which Don Quixote very deliberately and phlegmatically replied, "Fair damsel, at the present moment your request is inopportune, for I am debarred from involving myself in any adventure until I have brought to a happy conclusion one to which my word has pledged me. But that which I can do for you is what I will now mention. Run and tell your father to stand his ground as well as he can in this battle, and on no account to allow himself to be vanquished, while I go and request permission of the Princess Micomicona to enable me to succour him in his distress. And if she grants it, rest assured I will relieve him from it." "Sinner that I am," exclaimed Maritornes, who stood by, "before you have got your permission, my master will be in the other world." "Give me leave, Senora, to obtain the permission I speak of," returned Don Quixote, "and if I get it, it will matter very little if he is in the other world, for I will rescue him thence in spite of all the same world can do. Or at any rate, I will give you such a revenge over those who shall have sent him there that you will be more than moderately satisfied." And without saying anything more, he went and knelt before Dorothea, requesting her highness in knightly and errant phrase to be pleased to grant him permission
to aid and succour
the castellan of that castle, who now stood in grievous jeopardy. The princess granted it graciously, and he at once, raising his buckler on his arm and drawing his sword, hastened to the inn gate, where the two guests were still handling the landlord roughly. But as soon as he reached the spot, he stopped short and stood still, though Maritornes and the landlady asked him why he hesitated to help his master and husband. "I hesitate," said Don Quixote, "because it is not lawful for me to draw sword against persons of squirely condition. But call my squire Sancho to me, for this defense and vengeance are his affair and business." Thus matters stood at the inn gate, where there was a very lively exchange of fistcuffs and punches, to the sore damage of the landlord and to the wrath of Maritornes, the landlady, and her daughter, who were furious when they saw the pusillanimity of Don Quixote and the hard treatment the master, husband, and father was undergoing. But let us leave him there, for he will surely find someone to help him, and if not, let him suffer and hold his tongue who attempts more than his strength allows him to do, and let us go back 50 paces to see what Don Luis said in reply to the judge whom we left questioning him privately as to his reasons for coming on foot and so meanly dressed. To which the youth, pressing his hand in a way that showed his heart was troubled by some great sorrow, and shedding a flood of tears, made answer, "Signor, I have no more to tell you than that from the moment when, through heaven's will and our being near neighbours, I first saw Donna Clara, your daughter and my lady. From that instant I made her the mistress of my will, and if yours, my true lord and father, offers no impediment, this very day she shall become my wife. For her I left my father's house, and for her I assumed this disguise, to follow her whithersoever she may go. As the arrow seeks its mark, or the sailor the pole star, she knows nothing more of my passion than what she may have learned from having sometimes seen from a distance that my eyes were filled with tears. You know already, Signor, the wealth and noble birth of my parents, and that I am their sole heir. If this be a sufficient inducement for you to venture to make me completely happy, accept me at once as your son. For if my father, influenced by other objects of his own, should disapprove of this happiness I have sought for myself, time has more power to alter and change things than human will." With this, the love-smitten youth was silent, while the judge, after hearing him, was astonished, perplexed, and surprised, as well at the manner and intelligence with which Don Luis had confessed the secret of his heart, as at the position in which he found himself, not knowing what course to take in matters so sudden and unexpected. All the answer, therefore, he gave him was to bid him to make his mind easy for the present, and arrange with his servants not to take him back that day, so that there might be time to consider what was best for all parties. Don Luis kissed his hands by force, nay, bathed them with his tears, in a way that would have touched a heart of marble, not to say that of the judge, who, as a shrewd man, had already perceived how advantageous marriage would be to his daughter, though, were it possible, he would have preferred that it should be brought about with the consent of the father of Don Luis, who he knew looked for a title for his son. The guest had by this time made peace with the landlord, for, by persuasion in Don Quixote's fair words more than by threats, they had paid him what he demanded, and the servants of Don Luis were waiting for the end of the conversation with the judge and their master's decision, when the devil, who never sleeps, contrived the barber, from whom Don Quixote had taken Mambrino's helmet and Sancho Panza the trappings of his ass in exchange for those of his own, should at this instant enter the inn, which said barber, as he led his ass to the stable, observed Sancho Panza engaged in repairing something or other belonging to the pack saddle.
And the moment he saw it, he knew it,
and made bold to attack Sancho, exclaiming, "Ho, Sir Thief, I have caught you. Hand over my basin and my pack saddle and all my trappings that you robbed me of." Sancho, finding himself so unexpectedly assailed and hearing the abuse poured upon him, seized the pack saddle with one hand, and with the other gave the barber a cuff that bathed his teeth in blood. The barber, however, was not so ready to relinquish the prize he had made in the pack saddle. On the contrary, he raised such an outcry that everyone in the inn came running to know what the noise and quarrel meant. "Here, in the name of the king and justice," he cried, "this thief and highwayman wants to kill me for trying to recover my property." "You lie," said Sancho. "I am no highwayman. It was in fair war my master Don Quixote won these spoils." Don Quixote was standing by at the time, highly pleased to see his squire's stoutness, both offensive and defensive, and from a time forth he reckoned him a man of mettle, and in his heart resolved to dub him a knight on the first opportunity that presented itself, feeling sure that the order of chivalry would be fittingly bestowed upon him. In the course of altercation, among other things, the barber said, "Gentlemen, this pack saddle is mine as surely as I owe God a debt, and I know it as well as if I had given birth to it. And here is my ass in the stable who will not let me lie. Only try it, and if it does not fit him like a glove, call me a rascal. And what is more, the same day I was robbed of this, they robbed me likewise of a new brass basin, never yet hand-saddled. That would fetch a crown any day." At this, Don Quixote could not keep himself from answering, and interposing between the two and separating them, he placed the pack saddle on the ground to lie there in sight until the truth was established, and said, "Your worships may perceive clearly and plainly the error under which this worthy squire lies when he calls the basin which was, is, and shall be the helmet of Mambrino, which I won from him in fair war, and made myself master of by legitimate and lawful possession. With the pack saddle I do not concern myself, but I may tell you on that head that my squire Sancho asked my permission to strip off the
caparison of this vanquished poltroon steed, and with it adorn his own. I allowed it, and he took it.
And as to its having been changed from a caparison into a pack saddle, I can give no explanation except the usual one, that such transformations will take place in the ventures of chivalry. To confirm all which, run, Sancho my son, and fetch hither the helmet which this good fellow calls a basin." "Agad, master," said Sancho, "if we have no other proof of our case than what your worship puts forward, Mambrino's helmet is just as much a basin as this good fellow's caparison is a pack saddle." "Do as I bid thee," said Don Quixote. "It cannot be that everything in this castle goes by enchantment." Sancho hastened to where the basin was, and brought it back with him, and when Don Quixote saw it, he took hold of it and said, "Your worships may see with what a face this squire can assert that this is a basin and not the helmet I told you of, and I swear by the order of chivalry I profess that this helmet is the identical one I took from him, without anything added to or taken from it." "There is no doubt of that," said Sancho, "for from the time my master won it until now he has only fought one battle of it, when he let loose those unlucky men in chains, and if it had not been for this basin helmet, he would not have come off over well that time, for there was plenty of stone throwing in that affair."
唔该晒 Costa。 好，呢一节就读完啦。 咁啊，终于知道咗呢个神秘嘅 Muratia呢个唱歌者嘅身份啦。 佢就系 Don Luis啦。 啊，呢个 Don Luis咧就系呢个执行官或者 Clara 呢两父女嘅邻居个仔啊，都系有身份嘅。 咁佢就表明咗咧，佢系想迎娶呢个 Clara 啦，但系就因为娶唔到啊，于是乎咧佢就易容啦，或者disguise 咗自己啦，偷偷地跟住你上路。呢个 Clara 咧，似乎都内心系都系喜悦嘅吓，而佢嘅父亲咧，亦都一个精挑细算嘅人，都认为咧都算系门当户对嘅。但系呢一刻咧，佢就未即时咧去迎娶呢头婚事主。 咁另一边咧 ，Don Quixote 咧，因为佢嘅叫声咧就太凄厉啦，啊，佢嘅痛楚叫声，呢、这个旅馆女儿佢女仆人咧就解锁咗佢，解放咗佢，咁 Don Quixote 就跌咗落嚟。而喺呢个时候，众人咧都上前去问佢发生咩事啦。咁 Don Quixote 咧就将呢啲一切嘅怪事咧就一律列为咧系佢嘅骑士世界嘅黑魔法啦，系专系为咗系去整蛊佢嘅。咁于是乎咧，佢就要揾出呢个人出嚟，就同佢决斗。咁但系当然冇人理佢啦。亦都喺呢个时候咧，又出现咗其他事，就系、是、有两个人咧，因为趁咁多喺个咁混乱嘅情况咧，就谂住咧唔俾旅费就逃走。但系咧呢个旅馆个馆主咧截停咗佢哋，咁啊继而咧引起争执，咁啊打起上嚟。旅馆嘅女儿同埋佢嘅女仆人，当然就去揾人去交换啦。而当时只有 Don Quixote 咧有呢个空余去出手帮助，但系 Don Quixote 嘅回应咧，竟然系负面嘅。佢就系话：哦，因为咧我而家咧就系契约在身嘅，我必须要得到我嘅女主人佢嘅认可，我先至会出手相助。但你放心，只要我得到呢个许可咧，我就即时可以排难解困噶。咁众人咧就当然对 Don Quixote 嘅优柔寡断啦，非常之唔高兴啦。咁但系最后咧 ，Don Quixote 咧都得到佢嘅女主人嘅认可，于是乎咧就出手帮助。继续发展落去咧，就系、是、连阿 Central 咧都介入咗一件事啦。我哋下一节再继续讲落去啦。好，我哋睇下呢一字有啲咩字同大家分享。Importune，Importune，I-N-O-P-P-O-R-T-U-N-E， 有啲似 opportunity 啊，但系有个 in 啊呢个 I-N 喺前面，咁我意思咧就系 occurring at an inconvenient or inappropriate time， 不合时宜。以字面解释到有字啊，形容词嚟嘅。Pusillanimity 系有啲难读嘅 ，P-U-S-I-L-L-A-N-I-M-I-T-Y。Pusillanimity 名词嚟嘅 ，lack of courage or determination，timidity 胆怯嘅，优柔寡断。咁故事入面咧就用呢个字咧去形容 Don Quixote 拒绝本主女儿佢哋嘅请求嘅时候，众人觉得佢系有啲胆怯。好，我哋下一节再解读你听，拜拜。
If you like this video, make sure to comment, like, share, and subscribe to Costa. See you next Friday.